Hello, welcome to This One Time at Summer Camp. I'm comedian Steve Bouger. This is the podcast where we talk to people who have been to camp, worked on camps, and organised the camps. They'll be sharing their stories, their memories, and their mishaps for our enjoyment. This week's guests are Tom and Chelsea. They have both worked on summer camps a few years back, and they have got some brilliant stories. Tom talks about being left in charge for the very first time. They both talk about little victories they got during the summer. And Chelsea touches on levitation. Enjoy. Chelsea, what year did you go? Let's get the facts out before we start doing the stories.
It was 2010. It was the summer after my first year at the University of Manchester. Kind of saw it as a way to go to America on a free holiday. Perhaps I went in with the wrong kind of
so far, I haven't
desires.
Mentioned looking after children
oh,
yet.
Oh, yeah. That was just a side project.
Yeah. Okay. So 2010, you're what, 18, 19?
I was 19.
19 years old. And you went to New York State.
Yeah, that's right. A place called Middletown.
Okay, great. And what kind of camp was it? Any special needs? Or
oh, so
like...
this is what I need to explain. So did you both do Camp America?
Yes, we did. Me and Tom actually worked at the same camp.
Yeah.
Ah, so oh, mine yeah. was incredibly unofficial. So I studied in America for a year when I was 18, and a friend invited me back to one that he did. So I didn't even have to interview for this. I literally rocked up because they were like, she's British, Mary Poppins, get her in. Get her involved.
She must be good at looking after children.
I literally sent one email about me, like, I'm Chelsea. I love listing everything about children. I'd love to come along to this, in my head, New York, New York, not thinking it's going to be a field 2 hours away from New York City.
Yeah.
So what type of camp was it? I didn't know before I turned up. And actually, it was just a very regular camp. The way that it worked was kids from the local area went in 2 week stints, 12 days packed in, and then they change over, and we did that 4 times.
Okay.
The kids were mostly from poorer areas.
Yeah.
I gotta say poor. I feel like that's not something you can say these days, is it?
Yeah, it's fine.
Deprived areas.
Underprivileged.
Here we go. Thank you.
Peasants.
I didn't say peasants.
That's a better term, isn't it?
It could have been a lot worse. And by that, I say there probably was a whole host of problems that we had to deal with as counsellors, but we didn't know that when we were signing up for it.
Okay.
And that's what all I'll say now.
Willfully ignorant.
Indeed.
As you signed up.
Yeah.
But you didn't go through any official channels. So you're very much through a backdoor entry. Did you even get a visa?
Yes.
You did get a visa. Good.
Good.
I'm very pleased that you definitely got a visa.
J1.
Chelsea Dickinson, 2010.
Was it J1 or J2?
Well, to be fair, I still had a visa because I had a student visa.
Okay.
So is that a working visa though? Is it?
I wasn't earning money though.
Oh, you weren't earning money?
No.
Why did you go?
Because my friends went and he was like, come and do it. I did get stipends that covered the cost of like my flights and things like that. So I think I broke even across the whole summer.
Okay.
But I wasn't like... getting paid.
Right.
Okay. It was all very dodgy.
It doesn't sound great. Okay, good.
Did any kids go to this camp?
All right. And then Tom, you went on a much more official basis.
Through
a legal channel, yeah. You got a visa, which Chelsea also did.
Mm-hmm. What type of visa was that?
J1 visa.
Just for my future questioning double.
This will lead J1, I believe.
J1 visa, yeah. And we went to the same one. We met at camp.
We met in Heathrow as we were going.
Did we?
Yes, we did.
I don't remember.
I don't remember that. Yeah. We'll be the departure lounge, not the arrival lounge.
Yeah, but we were going through security. And I can remember looking at Steve and going... he looks like a mix between Ed and David Miliband. So
I've never thought of that.
Wow.
Excellent.
I am the third Miliband.
No, you're a mix.
Okay. Well, thank you. You've never said that to me before.
They're both doing so well politically.
I tell you that every time I see you.
Was it looks-wise or just like my general political stance? Are you basically saying I was slightly left of centre politically?
I'm basically
on average,
describing what you
was
you
he
are
eating
actually are.
A bacon sandwich.
Yeah,
no, but that would have been the test to see which Miliband he was. We just had an immediate, in-depth conversation about politics. I think
did we?
And I was like, oh.
A friendship formed.
Yeah.
And then we went and worked at Round Lake Camp in Pennsylvania, about 2 hours from Philadelphia, I'd say.
I can't remember.
Middle of nowhere, basically.
Nearest city was Scranton.
Scranton, from the US office fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, about half an hour for that, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And our camp was a camp for kids with autism.
Yeah. ADHD.
Yeah.
And it was Jewish.
Oh, yeah, it was a Jewish camp, crucially.
There's a lot of box ticking going on here.
Yeah, well, it was a very niche camp.
Niche camp.
See advanced options and then tick all the boxes. And that was...
Yeah.
They depend on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having not just like one dependent, but like...
Yeah, like eight.
Eight of them.
Yeah.
For 24 hours a day.
So you had eight kids.
We were different, weren't we? We were different types of bunk. I had three of me, three counsellors, and maybe 10 kids, I think.
I think we had... probably eight or nine kids, and there was five counsellors because we had there was a higher need within our bunk.
Your kids were really one-on-one basically, weren't they?
Definitely.
Whereas, what was your ratios, Richard?
Two counsellors to about 12 kids.
Ooh,
but it could be up to 15.
What do you mean? Why did you get more?
Well, because you just accepted everyone.
Oh, they're back. They've been in the woods for a week. All right, join the gang.
No, you're joking, but it really was this ramshackle. But I remember in the second session, my co-counselor got ill, so I had to look after all the kids myself.
Well, when they have a day off, you know, when your co-counselor has a day off.
We didn't have days off.
We didn't have days off.
We had 30 minutes off a day.
3-0.
A shower and a can of Coke.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
when the shower's happening.
Yeah.
You can't even afford a normal, typical morning routine. Someone behind you with a stopwatch.
I kind of don't want to speak to you about it because I'm starting to realise why my camp experience maybe wasn't as positive as everyone else's. But yeah, we didn't get time off in general.
And you didn't get paid?
No.
Wow.
And that's why you should go through the official channels.
Yeah.
I am the poster child for Summer Camp America.
Yeah, Camp America will be using you for their posters. Yeah. Going, look how miserable she was. Come through us. It's much more official. Okay, so potentially you had 1 to 10 kids at some point. 1 to 12 at some point.
Yeah.
That's pretty full on. I remember that, when my co-counselor had a day off and I was in charge. I think it was just an afternoon he had off. And then he came back and I remember really vividly one of the kids saying to him, he walked back and the kids were basically, it was chaos in the bunk. And the kids looked at, the older kids looked at Sam, my co-counselor, and said, this is what happens when you leave Steve in charge. And I just, all my authority had gone. Like everything, the kids knew, they'd seen through me. They were like, he doesn't know what he's doing. And Sam was like, we know.
Was he older than you?
Sam was but not much, like maybe in a year, maybe 2 years older than me. Okay. Yeah. But he just had a more kind of teacher vibe.
Yeah.
A bit more authoritative.
I think he'd been through camp, hadn't he? So
yeah, it was his second year. Wasn't it?
Okay. But,
yeah.
Yeah. Like to have that shot of confidence when you already know that you're not doing a good job.
When you know you're not doing a good job, but the kids know you're not doing a good job. That's the worrying thing. You sort of think if you're not doing a good job, at least the kids are having fun. Yeah. Like they're running riot. Yeah, yeah. But if they also feel let down by you, then that's
Steve's
bad.
Just not organized enough.
Yeah. So your camp, Chelsea, did you salute the flag every morning? Was it all that stuff? Or the singing national anthem and
We did have a flagpole. We
not sure what flag was on it.
I do remember they sang the national anthem on the 4th of July.
Okay.
So we definitely did it.
So it was
then.
Definitely in America. That's what we do.
Yeah. We were definitely in America and I made a massive faux pas. I mean, I intentionally made this faux pas, but I didn't realise how big a deal it would be. But on the 4th of July, got to say it the right way around, I wore Union Jack socks and it did not go down well. My co-counsellors, one of them refused to talk to me all day long because they said it was the most offensive thing anyone's ever done towards him in his country.
Wow.
It's a bit much. But they retaliated by they got all the kids to run past my where I was staying, saying the British are coming. And they all pretended to shoot at me. I mean, I feel like I'm a bit of a therapy session right now.
I think that's a funny thing to do.
Yeah,
I think wearing Union Jack socks.
I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. But
was your camp, was there not many British people at your camp?
No, I was the only foreign person. Everyone else is American.
That does change things.
It does change the dynamic a little bit.
And I mean, I didn't really know too much of the history of the 4th of July, but I have seen Hamilton now, and I can say
the British
that,
play quite a big role.
Yeah.
Did you wear your American socks? your Jet socks there.
Yeah,
well.
And I, at the interval, peeled them off when I get it now.
We're the bad guys.
We're the bad guys.
So that's a really different experience. We haven't spoken to anyone yet who didn't go out with other British people. So you're out there with loads of Americans. Were you like the novelty English person?
Yeah.
Well, you're Welsh, actually.
Yeah, but still English accent.
To them.
They always say,
did they know where Wales
from
was?
Wales, England.
Did they?
Yeah, constantly.
Good. Wales, England.
Yeah.
Good. Like a little town, a little quaint town called Wales in England. And by international listeners, Wales is a country. Just. You were surrounded by Americans.
Mm-hmm.
They were they nice to you, or was it?
Oh, so nice. Everyone was so, so nice, yeah. The people I went to camp with were amazing.
What kind of training did you get? Because it feels like maybe you were thrown in the deep end a little bit, Chelsea.
We did have 2 days training.
Two days? It's not a lot, is it?
Why, how much did you have?
We had a week.
Oh, wow. But you were...
But there are serious question marks over that.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Over our week.
The week we got trained?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Question marks.
I think there was a lot of time where we weren't really doing that much.
Yes. Well, there was a lot of like building stuff, and there was like
sorting
the beds out and stuff. Yeah. It wasn't really getting trained.
Yeah.
And considering the kids had quite high needs.
I mean, we watched Rain Man.
Did we?
That was part of our...
That was part of your training.
Yeah. To understand what autism would look like.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, we did.
So we all just thought, we're going to Vegas with the kids.
But none of them could do it. Lost a lot of money.
But that was it, like, which I guess as a 18, 19-year-old, that was a really good first introduction and a like an appropriate one of what autism could look like. But on reflection now, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I sort of think with our camp, there was no real way to prepare us.
No.
There was nothing they could have done. Mm. They marched, going, just turn up on the first day. It's going to be a mess. You'll get used to it.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that in camp. They've thrown yourself in the deep end. And I think that's where, why your mask slips, because you are kind of like sort of flapping away, trying to stay afloat. But that's where you kind of grow, and that's why it ends up being good, I think. But
yeah, definitely. You grow and you learn so much. The only problem is if you do something wrong, you might kill a child.
The jeopardy is high.
The jeopardy is so high.
What activities did they do?
Yeah, what kind of stuff was at your camp?
So we did sports, crafts, nature.
Nature, it's a classic.
Because there was a little brook at the end of the camp. The camp did not have a lot. It did have a swimming pool. That was very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. But... I must admit that for some of the activities, it was a bit like, there's a stick, let's play sword fighting. But at the end of this long, big field, there was actually a brook. So we used to go down with our sticks and look for like, build a dam. You know, those stuff from your childhood that is proper mint. So who needs money when you...
None of the sticks were getting paid though to be there. that's quite a good range of activities though.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah.
We had basketball courts, lake.
Yeah, we had a basketball court.
Yeah.
Ropes,
which were underused.
But also like when we're going back to the whole looking after children, it's like, why are we putting them on high ropes? Why are we doing this?
Yeah, yeah. It feels like the money could have been used for something else.
Oh, was it like Go Ape?
Yeah. Like a mini Go Ape, yeah. On a small scale.
Yeah, but still.
I was thinking of, you know, in your school gymnasium.
Oh, and the rope just come down from the roof and you climb it.
That's what I thought.
And you touch the top and then you go down again. No,
we did have those in the gym, but we never used
them. Oh, in the gym. You had a gym
as
well.
We had a big gym.
Well, we had a main hall.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take you back to the very first day. The first day the kids arrived.
Yeah.
Because that's a big moment. Yes. It kind of all gets real very, very quickly.
Yes.
And because up until then, you meet your co-counselors, you do a bit of training, sometimes you drink and stuff. Like, it's quite fun the bit before. It's quite social. And then suddenly the kids arrive and it gets chaotic. Can you describe to us that first day, Charles?
Well, I was looking after girls aged 10 to 12, which I think is a really interesting group, because they can be either, well, like all age groups, but they're on the cusp of being a teenager. So there's that reluctance and awkwardness of, about being enthusiastic about camp. And I found that the most difficult, because I was full smile on, very, hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. I had the whole British accent going on.
Yeah.
So that helped, definitely. But quickly, I realised that could be an instant turn off in terms of, they could be like, oh no, I don't like you. You're too enthusiastic. You're too, because they were already in the, I'm pretty cool, actually.
Too cool for camp.
I'm too cool for camp.
Too cool for camp, but not too cool to get out of going to camp.
But yeah, and you can imagine, if you don't want to be there and you've got some British girl like in your face being like, oh, let's go jump. Yeah.
Let's go
rope.
To the brook, guys. Yeah.
They don't want to be there. So that's what I quickly realized, that I had to tone it down, if anything, and I had to try
just be a bit cooler.
Yeah,
which was really hard, actually. But I think it was just feeling very overwhelmed about how many kids were in this cabin that I was looking after.
Hello, welcome back to this one time at summer camp. I'm Steve Bouget. Now, given some of Chelsea's doubts that she's expressed about working on a summer camp, I thought I'd give some balance. Here is Beth, who I think perfectly sums up why I and her think doing summer camp is brilliant.
My name is Beth, and I was a summer camp counsellor for 3 years at Camp Favourite, a Girl Scout camp located in Cape Cod, which is a small island off of the coast of Massachusetts. One of the great things about my friends from camp is that they're so diverse, and I think quite a lot of us, if we hadn't have met at camp, we probably wouldn't be friends, because we probably just wouldn't have bumped into each other in our social circles. At camp, you live with each other, you work and you live with each other, and you're probably not more than 3 meters away from another person at any point of the summer, which definitely took quite a while to get used to. And I'm quite an extrovert, so I loved being around people all the time, but some of my more introverted friends, I think, struggled a bit. And I suppose, you know, sleeping in a tent with like 3 randomers did take a while to get used to, but I absolutely loved it. Once you get used to it, it's fine. It's just like having a sleepover every night. I still talk to loads of my friends from camp. One of the best things is that you have your old friends, but then every summer you go back, you also make new friends. And I think we've all decided that we're all going to make our children marry each other. And then we're all going to send our children to camp as well. So we can all hang out, our children can become friends and hang out. And it's going to be fabulous. I think it's an absolutely great plan. Everybody's down for the situation. I think that camp most definitely affected my future. It's had a major impact on my life, really. At camp, you had to learn lots of skills which are very, very transferable. I work in the NHS at the moment. I'm a physician associate. And actually, yeah, there are so many situations where the skills I use every day, I've definitely had to use a lot of at camp. Say, for example, you know, leadership and communicating, and I think being resilient. One other thing that I think I definitely have learned from camp is just, I'm a relentless optimist. I mean, there are times where you just have to get on with it. If life isn't going your way, whatever, you just have to make the most of it. And I mean, I'm a very positive person, and camp definitely honed that. Yeah, I think there's just so much that I've learned from camp that I use in my everyday life. And, you know, camp, I think it's helped me to be more confident. It's helped me to figure out who I am as a person. So I finished my undergraduate degree, and graduation was going to be midsummer, and I decided to come to camp instead. And I was just like, oh, whatever, I want to do a master's, there'll be another graduation, hopefully. So I'd missed graduation. I'd spent all day driving up the Cape to a place called Provincetown, and I'd been on a whale watch with sassy teenagers who, like, loads of them got seasick, and they, once they'd seen one whale, they were over the whale watch thing. And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry, sunshine, we have to be on this boat for another like 3 hours, I can't do anything about this. But it'd been a long day, and so we'd all eaten our dinner, and I was kind of scraping the plates clean, and then a camper came up to me and was like, oh, Cabri, can you go and talk to this other camper? Like, she's really upset and she wants to talk to you. Oh, I'm not gonna lie, I was scraping this plate and I was like, is there not another counsellor? I literally just want to sit here, get through this evening and go to bed. Like, I'm a very happy and optimistic person, but I was exhausted. So yeah, I was like, yeah, that's fine, let's go and have a chat. Where is the camper? And see, this camper was sitting outside the dining hall, kind of like on the steps, and I was chatting away to this camper who had like tears rolling down her face, and I was like, where has this come from? Like, what is wrong with this child? Like, what is going on? I was starting to, you know, wanting to wrap this conversation up because I was like, I don't know why this child is crying, but I think it's probably going to be best if we all just get back inside and like have some ice cream or something. Then it was really odd. This child literally stopped crying in like the blink of an eye and was like, I feel better now. Let's go back in the dining hall. And I was like, what? And then the director was like, no, it's fine. We can go back inside. And I was like, wait, no, we can't. She's literally been really upset. Are you sure? I walked back into the dining hall and the entire, you know, what I saw, literally nearly, I thought I was going to burst into tears. All of the other camp counselors were standing at the head of the hall, all dressed in blankets and graduation caps. And there was a massive sign that said, graduates 2015, happy graduation Cadbury, or something along those lines. And the entire camp was wearing graduation caps. And so I got a blanket wrapped around me, I got a graduation hat put on my head. And yeah, I can't describe just how like full my heart was at that point. I was just like, wow, this is just emotionally too much for me. It was just fantastic. And I've got a video of it. And if ever I'm feeling a bit down, I'll just watch the video. And yeah, it's absolutely incredible. I have had the best summers of my life being a camp counsellor. And I think it's changed me for the better, and I've made incredible friends. And now, you know, that I have a full-time job now, and you know, I pay insurance, and you know, I have a car, and like, I'm an actual grown-up. And I'm really sad that I won't have another opportunity to go back to camp. But yeah, it's the best thing I have ever done, and I think everyone should do it. You learn so much. Yeah, it's gonna be hard, but you just have to get on with it, and it will make you a better person at the end.
Wow, thanks, Beth. Very resounding. Anyway, let's get back to the doubters with more from Chelsea and Tom.
You must have had that like first day thing four times.
Yeah.
With the kids arriving for each session.
Yeah.
You had that. Did you get better at it? By the fourth time, you just really cool. You're just like, oh, hey guys, welcome to the photo camp. How's it going?
Yeah. I think you do though, don't you? You look at yourself from day one to the last day and you're so calm. I imagine it's nothing like having kids, but I imagine you always hear about people saying that on your third kid, you don't really care if your kid's snoring at the table.
Or if you drop it or something. Oh, it's fine, it'll be fine.
But you get like that with summer camp, I think. You do become a bit more relaxed and you're not as scared about everything.
Yeah.
I think I was just very scared on the first day.
I can remember after 10 days going to speak to one of the, like, because ours had such a massive age range. We had like four divisions, and I went to speak to my kind of division head, and I was like, so I think I'm going to go home.
Really?
Yeah. After 10 days, I was gone, just because it wasn't what I envisaged it being.
Well, let's unpack that. What did you envisage? What was in your head when you got there?
So as much as I knew that it would be a special needs camp, I envisaged that I'd be with the campers that were slightly younger and
more
into sports and things like that. And yeah, a little more kind of like conversational and things like that. And the bunk that I ended up in, which now I'm so glad I was in. But, you know, after 10 days, I was like, I don't. And even when I spoke to the campers, they wouldn't respond. And it was just kind of really like, this is not what I envisaged.
And also some of your campers were older as well, weren't they? Your age.
There was three or four that were older than me. So all of that just threw me and overwhelmed me quite a bit.
Yeah.
In that part wasn't the part that was sold to me. I almost, weirdly, and this shows my age of when I was going, that I looked at it as in like, we get a lake, we get ropes, as if I was just going to do these activities rather than...
I get to go to activities every day.
Whereas like the campers that I was with, they weren't really engaged in ropes. None of them were interested in sport. So like I would go along to these activities and realistically nothing was really happening. I just found it a bit boring and dry for the first 2 weeks until I think just something snapped and
What changed?
When I went to speak to the division head and the head of camp about what I thought, and then they kind of said, well, you know, there's a reason why we put you in there, and we think you'd be really strong in that bunk. And also the kind of the idea, I guess it was something that I didn't really understand about autism or kind of the other learning disabilities that were at our camp, was the idea that there isn't, you know, you're not here to kind of fix them. It isn't something that can happen. And I guess I'd always just wanted to be able to do a really good job. And it was about me changing my expectations of what that good job looked like. So then it was, you know, then camp came way more about the camp as being as independent as possible, which then just shifted my idea of what camp was. And I was really interested in that side of things. But yeah, from kind of, it was a big leap from kind of week one to week three, I think.
And when you went back the second year, did you go back into the same cabin?
I said, you know, if I'm coming back, I need to be in the same.
So that's
bunk.
A big turnaround from 10 days in going, get me out of here, to end of the camp going, I'm coming back, but make sure I'm in this cabin.
Yeah, the not sound like a diva, but yeah, it was like, if I'm coming back, there's requirements.
If you want to renew this contract, there's going to be, that's amazing though. So you just sort of changed your expectations.
Yeah.
You changed what looked like whatever success was, you changed that. And then that made that more realistic.
I think because obviously the camp we went to, we got paid.
Not much though.
Not much. And that's the worst thing to ever do is work out how much your hourly rate is.
Yeah, don't do that. If you are going to camp, don't you?
Yeah. If you are going to camp, do not ever work that out.
Yeah, I guess it's not about that though, is it?
Well, it wasn't about it for you, Chelsea.
Chelsea would have spent a whole 30 minutes off working it out. Because sometimes at camp, you have these little successes, don't you? Have these little moments that are sometimes really small or sometimes they're bigger, but usually it's just a little thing that a kid does and you go, that's made my day, or that's made the week, or sometimes made the whole camp. And I remember a little moment, I remember there was a kid called Zach in our cabin. He was fairly, he misbehaved quite a lot, but he was a nice lad. And on the end of the camp, there was a prom and he got to be prom king. And I remember he had a prom date and they weren't really on a date, but he just got to stand at the front of the group as they walked into the prom. I have never seen a kid light up more. Like, he was so happy to be the prom king and he just wanted to be accepted. Like, that's what he was. That he used to misbehave, but really it was this just crying need to be like part of the group. And he was so happy. It made his whole camp. And it, like, watching him, it made my camp. And I just, yeah, it was an incredible moment. Can you remember those moments? Do you remember those? I've asked Chelsea, do you have any of those? You must have four sessions worth of those little wins. Those little incredible kid moments where you go, oh, that's made it worth it. That's made up all the rubbish bits worth it.
Yeah. And I think what it is, it definitely, it's always seems to be those kids that didn't really like you at the start. And maybe that we're just all so self-absorbed that we're like, yes, they finally like me. But it can often stem from the fact that they're really uncomfortable with being away from home and there's a lot going on for them. And it's just that moment when they start to be quite comfortable and they're enjoying it and they open up to you. That's really nice. I remember there was a girl who fit that description to a T. And on the last, I think we had like one day left to go, and she came and she'd made me a card and she'd drawn me on the front of it and it was really nice. And I was just like, oh my God, she wouldn't even talk to me on the first day. And when I opened it, it said, thank you so much for making my summer camp fun. I look forward to serving you for one more day.
Aww.
Don't you think that's weird? Serving you. Wait, does she think...
Does she not understand the dynamic?
I'm...
Maybe. Maybe because you were British. You're the only British one there.
Oh, no. This is what it
she
is.
She thought you hadn't won the Battle of Independence.
Oh, no.
You were still serving the Brits.
Oh, no. But no, apart from the whole serving aspect, which I quickly said to her, you know, you don't have to serve me. It's fine. You're right. And I think it always was a kid that didn't seem very comfortable when they got to camp. They're the best
kind of watching a kid go from sort of resenting being there. I remember there was a kid in my bunk called Alec, and he was a very smart lad, and he couldn't really connect with any of the other kids. He was sort of in another intellectual level above them, and he didn't really enjoy being there. He sort of insinuated he wanted to go home a few times, but his parents weren't keen on that. And I remember once we just got chatting about economics, and that was my degree. And we just would talk about it for hours, and he knew more than me, but he was like 12 years old. And suddenly he came alive, and like it made his day a little bit better. And I'd done that directly, and it made me feel amazing. And he didn't, for that 2 hours that we talked, he wasn't moping or wasn't unhappy. And it, made him go to bed with a smile on his head, on his face, rather than sort of crying and not wanting to be there. And it's those little things you feel like, oh, I actually did something. Like I feel like I earned my £2 an hour that in that second. Like it's there. You must have had loads of this time though, because your kids were incredibly challenging, but also there was a lot of hearts to them, weren't they?
I can remember us teaching the lads how to shave, and that was a really cool thing thinking about it, I'd probably shaved a handful of times before I went to camp, like not really needed to.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, oh, we're all learning to shave.
Yeah.
This is ace. But then I can remember one of the kids who definitely, I think we just got on quite well. But Abe, he was comfortable with shaving, but we kind of let him loose. And he ended up with minor sideburns. So he'd gone quite
high up,
but when on visitors day, when his mom and dad came, they were like, oh, has Abe been shaving? We were like, yes. And they were like, that's great though, this is like what we want him to get out of camp, like the independent stuff, which again, like when you meet the parents, you get a deeper understanding of the child themselves, well, the young adult themselves, I guess, and the kind of background that they're from and what they are kind of up to out of camp,
because
that is one thing with camp, it is just becomes such a bubble that nothing else in the world could be happening, but you are just,
and when the parents kind of pierce that bubble, you realize that, oh yeah, these kids have got a life outside this this camp.
Yeah, totally.
Did you teach anything else to the young girls?
Yeah, we started it was called Girls Circle. And
ooh, feminism.
The older girls, so like 10 and above, we would have an hour each week where we'd come together and just chat about girl things. But actually, it was brilliant. It was a bit like going to a youth club, I guess. But we spoke about, it blew my mind how fascinated they all were with calories. Like,
oh, wow.
10 to 12 year olds were like counting calories, are going, how many calories is in this cornbread? How many? And it kind of blew my mind that, and especially in America, I believe now that they have to have calories on all their menus. So it's actually really difficult to avoid having that knowledge now living in America. And that definitely came through. So we had a lot of those kind of conversations about, what does that mean? Does it matter if, about being healthy, what you eat, what you put in your body, but how it doesn't matter what you look like, it's about how you feel. So actually there were some really hardcore conversations that were going on. And also they really just wanted to know what it was like to kiss a boy. And
you were like, I would love to know too.
Yeah.
Can you let me know?
They taught me. It was great. But no, it was really, really nice. And it was probably the first time that they'd had those kind of conversations, those gossipy kind of conversations, but in a really positive way.
Yeah. Okay. So once you've done the whole camp, you've grown as a human, you've got through the trying to go home and then staying in the end. That day when you have to say goodbye to the kids, I mean, obviously you had to do it four times, Charles, but it's quite, I mean, do you still get that? Was it really emotional? Was it 12 days enough to form the bond, or?
Not going to lie, when I had no time off, I was just really excited to have my 2 days off coming up. However...
Oh, you did have 2 days off in between each session?
Yes. Oh, sorry.
Now it comes out.
Changed everything.
I did say 12 days. So we do 12 days back to back.
Okay,
and then cool. We had 2 days off as the kids.
Oh, that makes sense, because there's 14 days in two weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Part of me was really excited to just have a couple of days of downtime. However, I definitely did get attached to the kids, because the evening before they went, I would pay out of my own money to get like Papa John's sent in, and I do a bit of a pizza party.
Out of the own money that you're not getting paid?
Well, my money.
Well, Camp had none. So.
Yeah.
It's all right. Chelsea will get this.
There was no provision. So me and my co-counselor was split the cost. It wasn't that much. We got maybe like two pizzas, got some Coca-Cola in, you know. But I think it was that kind of awareness that for them, they were going to go home and they weren't from the type of households where they'd have treats like that. Yeah. So I was like, right, let's do them a send off. We'll have a bit of a party. And then on my last session, I had a different co-counselor and I said to her, right, on the last thing, we always get some sweets, some pizza and some pop and we'll split it between us. She was like, cool, I'll sort it out. I went off to do something, came back and she just got like a packet of crackers and a tiny little box of donut holes and that was it. And I was devastated. Oh, and that's when I realized that I was like, oh my God, I really like these kids. Because I was just so devastated that I wasn't able.
You threw them a crap party.
A really crap party. Yeah.
Is it too late to order the pizza in?
It was too late. And they had, and I couldn't look cross because I had to pretend that this was brilliant. And
the kids must have known.
Yeah.
They must have been like, oh, the kids in the last session said they got Papa John's.
I know. So, yeah, I definitely, I did get some of the feels. It is a bit of a tick list as well. It's quite, you know, there's a structure to that day.
I think camp was the most structure I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah.
I'm ever going to have in my entire life.
Yeah.
Like, you get up at the same time. You got certain, like, periods to do the activities in.
You eat the same thing every day.
Same food.
You exercise every day.
Yeah. And there's always people around you, never on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, I miss it. So there's one thing I want to touch on that we've not touched on yet, in that is how camp affects your life, how it changes, you know, what you go on to do. And that's certainly true for Tom, directly, I'd say.
Yes.
In what you do now is a direct result of doing camp back in 2009 and 10. So, what do you do now?
So I have co-founded a company that support people with learning disabilities and dementia to be as independent as possible.
That's amazing. Like, it's really, it's like legitimately doing very well, isn't it? Like, it's, I mean, you're very humble, but like it's a successful business. And you, Chelsea, you're now a professional brick builder.
I work in radio now. There is a slight link to what I do now. It's tenuous, perhaps. But what summer camp did for me, which was really, really great. I think I was a bit of a pushover before it. And I agree that you are so exhausted, so tired that you quickly have to shed all those kind of that fakeness about you and just get direct to the point. And I think that actually really did help me in that role. That, oh my God, I'm seeing a pattern here, that unpaid role. but I think it really did help me in terms of my leadership and definitely my speaking and my confidence in addressing people and all that kind of thing.
Not your confidence to ask when you get to get paid.
No, still struggling on that. Still, you know, do my work as a voluntary basis. No, I do get paid now and I make radio documentaries.
I thought you were about to tell us how much money you make. And I make a lot of money.
I don't make...
I got paid.
Yeah. I make radio documentaries now and...
You do think camp shaped you into the person you are and you don't think you'd necessarily
do it? Oh, yeah, because I think it really helped me realise that you can't just use being nice all the time. I think it taught me that actually you can get a lot of stuff done a lot quicker. Don't want to say by not being nice, you still need to be kind, but... It definitely taught me that.
A bit sterner.
Yeah, exactly. That you can be a bit tougher.
So, Tom, have you ever recommended camp to one of your other friends and did they go? What was their experience out of it?
I've always recommended camp to everyone that I chat to about. But the in between the first year I went and the second year, I was living with a guy called Joe, Joe Moose, one of my close friends. And I persuaded him to come to camp with me. So he was there for second year. And obviously I'd kind of let him know what first year was like. So, you know, I gave him a decent amount of knowledge, I felt, to really explain what camp would be like. First week was obviously there aren't any children or adults there. So it was quite easy. It was just getting to know your other counsellors. So that, I, you know, the dream I'd sold him was fine. And then I remember on the, it must have been the first or second day, him walking back from the lake and me walking past him. And I was like, how's your first day going, Joe? And he's like, well, one of the kids has just shit himself. So thanks for this, mate. I just remember being like,
had you not mentioned about the regular shitting himself?
Oh dear.
Did I forget about that?
Did he stick it out?
Yeah, loved it.
Oh, loved it in the end.
And but, then did the same old trick to his friend next year. I was like, yeah, it's great. You'll love it. Don't shit. No, what shits. Don't worry about it.
We used to, around the back of the each of the cabins, every morning, there would be at least one or two counsellors washing down a mattress, which I'm sure. But those elaborate games that you have to play to get everybody out of the cabin without them noticing that one of the kids has pissed themselves.
Ah.
Yeah.
What are the games? Just, I mean, just so
if, just like, being if like, it happens to me. Oh, I really fancy going for a run. All the girls in my cabins were all quite sporty or wanting to, they were obsessed with calories. They were all like, oh, I want to exercise as well, Chelsea. I was like, I'm going to go for a morning run. And you'd have to try and get them really excited about something so that they'd leave the cabin early so that your co-counselor could rip off the sheets, douse it down, so that by the time you're back, the bed's back in place and no one knows any different.
But what about the person who had done the weeing?
They'd have to come, they would tend to come over and like whisper in your ear.
Would they go for the run as well though?
Yeah, yeah.
But they would know what the run was about. They'd be running, but there'd be a slight guilty conscience on that. Yeah. Now, Chelsea, you were with girls who were almost teenagers. Like, how did you get them to sort of be excited about something?
Well, I did have to try and re-enter the mindset of myself at 12 years old and think, what did I like? And that was watching MTV and straightening my friend's hair. I swear that's all I did when I was 12. I couldn't do either of those things. So I was like, what else is there? And I remembered something that we used to do. And it's so stupid, but basically it got to 10 o'clock. Everyone's supposed to be in bed. And that's when I'd go around and be like, are you ready for the levitation? And everyone would be like, what's the levitation?
A little bit creepy.
I want to know what it is.
So what you do, and we did this growing up as well, is just one person lies on the floor. And then the group around them, you all have to like use like a couple of fingers or whatever to try and lift them up. And they will always feel really, really heavy. And there's some like really easy science to tell you how this works. Basically, the second time you do it, they always feel a lot lighter because there's that perception in it. But anyway, this is called levitation. And now I think about this, I can't believe I did this with these kids, but I used to do it at this age as well. You had to go around the circle and you start and you go, she looks ill. I can't not laugh doing it now as well. So, and this is the point, and this is what always makes it really funny, is that no one can laugh. Nobody can laugh, otherwise you have to start from the very start. So you have to go around going, she looks ill. And everyone would have to do it. And then so
everyone's saying she looks ill. And you're talking about the person on the floor.
Yeah. And then you go, we did it with the co-counselor, not to freak him out. She is ill. Go around.
She is ill.
She is ill.
She looks dead.
Taking a turn.
She looks dead.
She looks dead.
She is dead.
She is dead.
She is dead.
And then you'd lift the body up and they would always be so much lighter. It's a bit like telling ghost stories and things like that. Just that little
bit. And you
just
do it with a few fingers?
No, you'd have your hands like,
oh, okay.
There'd be me like doing most of the lifting, let's be fair. But yeah, they loved that.
That is a good game.
It's just that silly little bit of magic that, you know, that you all, nobody believes in, but it's a lot of fun.
You lost a lot of good counsellors. A lot of counsellors died. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. Have you got anything else you want to say to the listeners?
Always get paid for what you do.
That's a life lesson there from Chelsea Dickinson. Don't get taken advantage of. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Thank you so much to Chelsea and Tom. You've been listening to This One Time at Summer Camp. I'm Steve Brugere. Please subscribe to the podcast if you enjoy it and leave a little rating, a little review. That'd be really, really handy. Thank you very much. And if you've got stories yourself that you want to share or you just want to chat about camp or just anything really, I'm quite lonely, you can tweet me at Steve Brugere, at B-U-G-E-J-A. Come say hello and maybe I'll read out some of your stories on the podcast. Next episode, we have got the comedian and podcaster Richard Herring. He worked on a summer camp in the 1980s. So I'll see you then. Thanks for listening.